Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's just seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today. I'll be hosting Juneau Afternoon for the next hour, and we have some really fun guests coming on. Folks from the construction project managers out at UAS will be with us. Puamuno Monau, and Kay Mel will be here to tell us about projects that are coming up this summer. MJ Grant and Amelia Jenkins will drop in with details about the summer reading program at the library. Susan Oler, we'll call her up in Yakutat and find out about the upcoming Turn Festival. And Jonathan Inga will be here to talk about the connection between plastic chairs and the community garden, a little mystery that's going on out there. So stay tuned for Juno Afternoon. Coming up next, National Native News, and then we'll be up with those guests.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A half-finished museum intended to tell the story of Native Americans in Oklahoma may receive the funding it needs to complete construction. But as Kurt Gortney with KGOU reports, the last-minute plan still faces many hurdles.
$40 million. That's the amount of money a committee in the Oklahoma Senate is recommending for the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum in Oklahoma City. That commitment will be matched by another $40 million in private gifts. Democratic leader Representative Scott Inman says the state needs to complete the project.
Let's be honest, there are folks that live outside of our borders who still, when asked about the state of Oklahoma, think cowboys and Indians. I mean, they'll still say that in New York and California. And there are folks who will want to come here to go see the Cowboy Hall of Fame, as I've always referred to it, or the Native American Cultural Center and other things. And I think it would be wonderful for our city and our state.
Last year, the state Senate turned down a bond package for the project by a single vote. Some lawmakers say the state has already spent too much money on the museum. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon pushed for completion of the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum at the beginning of the legislative session in February. The partially completed facility now sits mothballed at the intersection of Interstates 35 and 40 near downtown Oklahoma City due to a lack of funding. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
The Institute of American Indian Arts will launch its first graduate program this summer. KUNM's Christine Trudeau reports the Master's of Fine Arts degree in creative writing will be the first program of its kind at any tribal college in the nation.
The two-year program will focus heavily on writing in a number of genres, and the Institute of American Indian Arts, or IAI, says there are nearly 30 candidates admitted for the program, which officially opens at the end of July. John Davis is the director of the Low Residency Creative Writing Program. He says students that have graduated from IAI in the past often go on to other MFA programs where they often find themselves alone.
And here, the other writers will be 75% Native writers, and so there'll be a totally different kind of atmosphere. It'll be kind of ownership of the program. I think this is going to change the landscape of literature. I think that small shelf of books by Native authors is going to become a very large shelf of books by Native authors.
Davis says the program's instructors include authors Joseph Boyden, Susan Power, Sherman Alexie, and Natalie Diaz, as well as IAIA alum. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
The Sundance Native Lab Fellowship has selected four fellows for 2013. The program teaches filmmakers how to produce a short film. Catalina Torres is a fellow this year. She says a positive portrayal of Alaska Natives and Native Americans in film is important for Native youth.
If we don't see our faces, then the messages that our children get are much different than the messages of the people that they see on TV. And the more that we can throw out there, the more positive messages our next generations see and hear and internalize.
Torres is Yupik, Inupiaq, and Athabascan. She says most of her films feature Alaska Natives in order to combat Hollywood images of indigenous people. The fellowship began with a workshop this week. Fellows were assigned a creative advisor to help edit their scripts. They also went through a crash course in short film production, directing, and casting roles. They'll attend next year's Sundance Film Festival in January. Students at South Dakota State University will soon be able to major in American Indian Studies. The Associated Press reports the undergraduate degree will be offered starting this fall. The Board of Regents say the new degree will give students the opportunity to gain knowledge and skills necessary to work in the public sector and tribal government. Now for a correction. In our Thursday newscast, we incorrectly stated in our story on Shoni Schimmel that the Umatilla tribe is in Washington State. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation is in Oregon. On this day in 1996, President Bill Clinton issued the Indian Sacred Sites Executive Order. The order called for Native Americans to be guaranteed ceremonial use of the land. President Clinton's order also pledged to protect sacred sites. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News. It's about 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. My first two guests are two project managers from the University of Alaska Southeast, Pua Maunu. Did I get it?
Huh? Yes.
Hey, I nailed it. Okay. And Kay Maller here. And there's a bunch of construction that started up kind of last year was the big kickoff of a lot of this. I think maybe before that, too, that changed the face of the University of Southeast from a place that you drove through to a place that you walk around. Mm-hmm. And I understand part two of that comes up this year. And Kay, I think you're the project manager for that program?
Actually, it's part three,
part three.
I am the project manager. The first phase was in 2011. We did two sub-projects. One was to add a right-turn lane at the north entry between Auk Lake Way and the Back Loop Road. And the second phase was to put a turnaround area in front of Hendrickson Building on campus. That was in preparation for last year's work, which was phase two, which was to close the road through campus and convert that area to a pedestrian-only corridor. Now, pedestrian only permits service vehicles and emergency access, but it's closed to the general traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a long-standing intention of the university. This year's work is phase three, which is to provide a service vehicle turnaround / pedestrian plaza in front of the Novotny Building. If we had done the entire project last year, it would have been too large a project to be comfortably finished by local contractors within the limits of a single construction season, and it would have been unduly disruptive to campus. So we broke it into two chunks, both of which are more manageable for all concerned.
Kay, have you started work on it yet?
We have not broken ground. It has been bid, and we have an apparent low bidder, but we have not yet awarded the construction contract.
So
we expect construction to start in mid-June because we want it to be complete by middle September.
What will be the impact of Phase 3 on people who are coming to and from the campus and like that?
Well, we try and keep the impact as modest as possible. There will be a contractor working on campus, particularly between the Egan Bus Circle and Novotny. And so since we closed the campus corridor last year, there should be minimal disruption. There'll be pedestrian access to everywhere on campus. You'll just have to follow the signs and stay out of the fenced, marked construction areas.
And then when's the proposed finish date? When will this all be?
Mid-September.
Oh, okay, so after the semester starts, probably a little bit.
Well, we're at the mercy of the length of the construction season.
I hear you. Okay, that's just one of the projects that you're involved with.
The other one is the bigger one. It's the new campus dorm, officially the UAS Student Residence Hall. That's on campus. Most of our housing is up at our housing campus on University Drive off the Back Loop. But this is a new dormitory that, when finished, will have 120 beds designed for freshmen on campus. It will be right next to Noyes Pavilion. As you take Auk Lake Way from the Back Loop to campus, there's a turn, and then you face Egan and the glacier, and it will be immediately to your right on the north side of Noyes. Now, we have a construction contractor under contract for that. It's ASRC McGraw, and they plan to break ground about the middle of June. And there will be some disruption to traffic to the university, not in terms of access, but the top parking tier on the north side of Noyes will be the contractor's staging area, and there'll be no parking in that area. We don't anticipate this to cause any problems because the campus is very fortunate to have an abundance of parking.
So this will be nestled back in those trees that are kind of, if you're looking at the Noyes Pavilion, they're kind of on the left side of the Noyes Pavilion.
On the right side if you're facing Noyes Pavilion.
I see. Okay. So how much forest do you have to take out in order to construct the dorm up there?
As little as possible. That's one reason that the finished 120-bed project is four stories tall. It minimizes the footprint and the area that we have to disturb in order to construct the dorm. As you drive down Auk Lake Way towards campus, we're leaving a screen of trees at the end of Auk Lake Way, so you should not see the backside of the dorm. You should not see the dorm until you, except maybe a bit above the trees, until you come into the parking lot and turn and look back at it.
So now that we've established that during the rest of the summer, the only times you'll see Kay is when she's running from one place to another and you can wave at each other. Pua, what's your work for the summer?
My projects are a little bit smaller, or a lot smaller than Kay's. One of the projects that I'm working on now, which North Pacific Erectors is going to be doing, is replacing the roof on Sobolov Building. And so as far as traffic patterns and pedestrian and that sort of disturbance, they will be coming on the lower road. It's the Fritz Cove Road entry as you drive up there, and you go to the lower road to the Chancellor's or Provost's office. That will have construction work occurring along that road.
That little dirt road that drops down over the side, down to where the Chancellor's office
is?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And so they'll be offloading roofing materials from there and loading on the new roofing materials there. So that's what's happening with the Sobolov Building.
Where's the Chancellor going to park while this is doing that?
Hopefully he'll still have his space, but there's always the wayside.
I'm sorry, John, we dropped a load of roofing on your car.
No, they better not.
What's housed in the Sobolov Building?
Pardon me?
What is housed in the Sobolov
Building? The Arts and Sciences. There are art classrooms on the bottom floor, and the top floor are faculty offices.
So you'll have summer classes going on in this building while you're doing the roofing project.
Mm-hmm. The roofing shouldn't impact any of the classes that are going on in the building. And they're aware that the ceramics people do cross and use the kiln on the opposite side of the building, on the opposite side of the road. So they're cognizant of that.
Even when they're using the pizza kiln over there?
Right.
You know they have a pizza kiln.
I've heard that they have made pizzas in there.
Actually,
I don't know how good they taste.
But anyway, there's sort of an overtone of glaze in the pizza. I can see it now.
The glass and
pizza. What else?
Okay, and let me see. We have a small project. It's a path project, and it's just finishing the pathway that goes from the corner of Egan Library to housing, and but the path will only be from about Egan, the corner of Egan Library, to the new Forest Service. Mm-hmm. The rest of the path was done last
this
summer.
This is the path that students walk coming from the housing
the
up on the hill,
mm-hmm,
where the dormitories, mm-hmm, are now, down to the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not tied to this new freshman dormitory.
No, it's a separate project, but it will impact the path that people use, because people do. It's a beautiful walk because it's along the lake and it's in a forested area. So people will have to divert their path or their regular walking pattern probably at about 2 to 3 weeks while the construction with that is happening, and they can walk along the roadway and then cut in at the parking lot at the U.S. Forest Service.
Do either of you know what the status of entry to the university is going to be when all of the construction is finished? Right now you enter off of the back loop road in an intersection that has a notorious blind spot to the left as you're coming out of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Will that change with the DOT plan to put a traffic circle in out there?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
We have seen DOT. We have DOT's plans for the intersection, and they will stripe crosswalks there. We have spoken to them about installing a walk light, which students have asked for. However, DOT has not seen fit to include that in the current project.
Okay, and how about the crossover to go over to the Marine Sciences Building?
At the Anderson Building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the status of that?
It's all dependent on the DOT project.
Okay.
They are planning to realign the curve in the road. And so until we have their final plans, we are holding off on putting a pathway, an elevated walkway over the glacier.
This is a separate project from the roundabout work, a separate DOT project.
Yeah, to figure out some way to make it a little safer for students to cross over there. Because those are two intersections right now that are a little bit of problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Well, the university is still, I think the university was voted one of the 10 prettiest campuses or most beautiful campuses in the United States.
Cool.
I think there was an award from one of the magazines that monitors campus things,
mm-hmm,
and they said that It was one of the, I think it was third out of 10 or something like that. So you're making it more beautiful. So thank you so much for all of the hard work you do.
Thank you.
And I shouldn't keep you here any longer because you probably have contractors running around out there and you need to go wave your hands at them and tell them, no, no, not there. That's where the tulips are. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 24th of May, 2013. 1626, on this day, Peter Minuit bought the island of Manhattan from the Lenape Indians. He did not give them trinkets and beads, as the legend goes. He paid them in useful things, cloth, kettles, axe heads, drilling, awls, worth about 60 silver Dutch guilders, which school children have been taught was worth about $24, but actually worked out to around $72, or the equivalent of about $1,000 today. Given the price of New York real estate nowadays, that represents about a 17% increase in value. In his History of New York City, George Lankovich maintains that Peter Minuit bought the island from the Canarsie Indians first, but they didn't live in Manhattan. They lived out on Long Island, and so he had to buy it over again from the Lenape. Today is the birthday of Bob Dylan, born Robert Zimmerman in Duluth, Minnesota, 1941, grew up in Hibbing nearby, just off Highway 61. Moved to Minneapolis, studied art at the University of Minnesota. He'd started out up in Hibbing with a rock and roll band, but he converted over to folk music and started playing gigs at a coffee house called the 10 O'Clock Scholar in Dinkytown near the university. He left Dinkytown for New York City, for Greenwich Village. By the mid-1960s, he'd gone back to rock and roll. Today, his lyrics studied in many college poetry classes. Kevin Barents at Boston University has his students read Dylan's album John Wesley Harding. Christopher Ricks at Oxford puts Bob Dylan on a par with Milton, John Keats, and Alfred Lord Tennyson. Dylan wrote a volume of poetry and prose called Tarantula. It was published in 1971. And it's the birthday of Michael Chabon, born Washington, D.C. in 1963, grew up in the suburbs in Columbia, Maryland, and then after his parents divorced, lived with his dad in Pittsburgh, setting up his first novel, The Mysteries of Pittsburgh. Came out in 1988. It was his master's thesis for the creative writing program at the University of California, Irvine. His second novel was supposed to be Fountain City. He worked on it for 5 years, couldn't finish it, went on to write The Wonder Boys, 1995, and then The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, a big bestseller, made his reputation in 2000. Michael Chabon, a defender of genre fiction against the snobbery of the literary establishment, he said it's true that the vast preponderance of art created for a mass audience is crap, but the vast preponderance of work written as literary art is high-toned crap. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, To a Daughter Leaving Home. When I taught you at 8 to ride a bicycle, loping along beside you as you wobbled away on 2 round wheels, my own mouth rounding in surprise when you pulled ahead down the curved path of the park, I kept waiting for the thud of your crash as I sprinted to catch up, while you grew smaller, more breakable with distance, pumping, pumping for your life, screaming with laughter, the hair flapping behind you like a handkerchief, waving goodbye. A poem by Linda Paston, To a Daughter Leaving Home, from her collection Carnival Evening, published by W.W. Norton, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Just closing on 20 minutes after 3, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next two guests are here to tell us about summer reading programs at the Juneau Library, the three public libraries in Juneau. And so MJ Grand and Amelia Jenkins are here. Hi, ladies. Welcome.
Hello.
And thanks for having us.
Yeah. So you have some amazing things coming up. This is like the reading program of the year here.
Well, it's the reading program of the summer.
Yeah.
So we want to take those kids who have worked so hard all year long, and they are done now. They're out today, and have them keep reading. You know, they've got assignments during the school year, and in the summertime, our goal is to find things they love or like and just keep reading for the pure pleasure of it and not to meet somebody else's expectations.
So now, MJ, what's your title over at the library?
I'm the Youth Services Librarian for the CBJ Library.
Okay, and Amelia?
I am a Library Assistant Tech 2.
Ooh, okay. But you have some responsibility
for
children?
Which means I'm part of the Youth Services team.
Yeah, okay. Good. So how big is the team?
We have 4 people, and one of them is Carol Race, who is so well known in the community, and she will be retiring on the 30th of June. We are sad, thrilled for her, and life will be different. But we also want to take this opportunity to invite everyone to her retirement party at the Auk Bay Shelter on Friday, the 28th of June, from 5 to 8 p.m.
We're going to have to get that published in the paper and shouted from the rooftop.
This is the first public announcement.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people who will want to go to that retirement party.
And
they will be saddened by losing her from the library staff.
She'll and happy be. To have her energy elsewhere in the town.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. She's staying.
Yeah. So you're doing toddler time, summertime family nights, story times plus crafts, third Thursday family time, family movie afternoons. Let's spread that out a little bit and find out what all those things are, shall we?
Those are briefly our ongoing programs that we do throughout the year. So our toddler times at downtown in the valley on Mondays, and our story times, we add crafts in the summer because everybody's got a little more time to hang out. So our first craft will start out with being puppets, because on Tuesday, June 4th, the Stevens Puppet Theater is coming to town again. Some of you may remember from last year the Wizard of Oz performance they did. So it was so packed that we now have 2 performances at 2 and 6 o'clock. And that's all I'm going to say because they're going to visit with you next Friday.
I'll be glad to see them just so people know where are those 2 performances.
They will both be at the Valley Library.
Are you going to have tickets or is it just to show up and
show up and we'll fit you in? Last year we got 200 people in the children's area of the Valley Library. So we can pack a lot, but we'll have 2 programs so it will be a little more comfortable this year.
Yeah, okay, good.
And then our family nights during the school year on the first Tuesday of the month, we join with AEYC, the Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Dolly Parton's Imagination Library for family night for preschoolers. But in the summertime, we get everybody. So it's family time. This summer it's going to be at the Douglas Library. Downtown Library will be losing its elevators on the 17th of June.
Yeah.
So we're going to be having our gatherings at the Valley at Douglas so that people have full access.
Yeah, both beautiful facilities.
Both.
If you haven't been to either one of them, they're wonderful places.
The Valley Library?
Well, the Valley Library is beautiful
because
of the people. Because of the people. That is such a helpful staff out there. That's where I do most of my library work. So.
Well, we'll take that as a compliment all the way around because all of our staff work at all of our facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, we spread ourselves around. Amelia, if you'll talk about the teen programs, that's kind of new this year.
Sure, we've got a few programs for older kids. On Saturday, June 1st at noon in Douglas, we're doing a video conference called The Art of Adornment. So that'll be on screen with the Cleveland Museum of Art.
And this is in Douglas, right?
This is in Douglas.
But I think there may be someone in the community who doesn't know that you added these wonderful video conferencing rooms to all of your facilities.
Right, all 3 libraries are fully equipped to do this video conferencing. And so those of us who can't go to the Cleveland Museum of Art for a 1-hour program can go to Douglas and benefit from their expertise. So we'll learn all about standards of beauty and personal adornment and expression. And then we will break out the henna and the Sharpies and the sticker tattoos and decorate ourselves.
Yeah, amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
And so?
July 20, a chocolate party. The first hour will again be information called From Treasure to Treat for the Botanical Museum in Canada. And in the second hour, we will eat chocolate. Pie in the Sky has already agreed to help us out with
oh,
that.
Oh, good for her.
That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. She is a chocolatier of some knowledge.
Amazing.
You know.
That's
yeah.
going to be.
She goes to Italy every once in a while and comes back with chocolate.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be it. We don't need to talk about that because everyone will be there already.
Yeah.
That's an easy
one of my favorite people in town.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Friday, August 2, we're participating in a national, what's called a teen lock-in. So a lot of places are doing it as an overnight. We're going to do it from 6 to 9 p.m. That'll be in Douglas. And we're connecting with kids all over the country.
By video conference. Oh, all right.
And authors are going to come in and give special presentations and we'll have games and snacks. And
6
pizza.
To 9 on Friday, August 2nd.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. All right. And then there's a award program that runs through the summer that kind of is an incentive for people to get involved with books and
exactly. So we have reading games for picture book kind of level readers and for chapter book readers. You read a certain number of books and then you get a free book to take home. And you can do as many of those games as you want to do throughout the summer. And then we also have a drawing for people that submit reviews of the books that they read. And at all three libraries, each week we pick two reviews. They get prizes that are donated by the business associations or the businesses of Juneau. So there's chocolate from the Fudge Company, tram passes, helicopter tour passes. All up and down around town, people really want to support our children in reading. So they give us prizes, and the people that give us reviews, we pass them right on.
Now, if the library were only for children, then that would be one thing. But as I understand it, you also have programs for adults.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk about Eowyn?
I won't be here. But Eowyn Ivey, who wrote The Snow Child, is passing through town and we'll stop here and
all
go
right.
to the library and speak on Thursday night, the 30th, so a week Thursday.
Yeah.
That'll be downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hearthside Books arranged for her to come in, and they are very generously sharing with us. And so she'll have a free public performance on Thursday night, a book signing Friday, and their author's cruise. She's going to be one
of them. She's
going to
be on the author's cruise.
On
yeah, that's coming up.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want tickets for that author's cruise, I think the boat is almost loaded. So it's time to time to get on to Hearthside and find out if they still got tickets
yeah,
left.
Yeah, she's good stuff.
Well, the whole thing is good stuff.
Yeah.
It's I think they're taking seven authors out with them and whale watching and like that.
Cool.
It's a great cruise.
Right. And then also for adult readers, you know, most adults bring the kids to us. So this year we're saying if you want to submit, if you read books and turn in sheets, we will also be doing adult prizes.
So are you going to have adult reviews posted somewhere?
We have a blog site on our website where you can submit a review. That goes year-round. We're also having a particular one for the summer. But if you go to our website, there in the center section, it says something and blogs.
Podcasts and blogs. Okay.
And at the top of that page, it's submit a review.
So if you read a great book, you can just drop a review on there in case you want to turn somebody on. Now, something I noticed out at the Valley Library, which is where I go quite commonly, there were staff picks in there. That's a program I hadn't seen before. So how does that work?
The books that staff enjoys, we write a review. We put the label on it. Again, those reviews are also available on the website. And
books or any other material.
Books or any other material.
So if you're cruising the library and you're trying to figure out something to read, you can actually go online and read a review by a staffer and see if this is something that you might be interested in.
That
those
is
books
correct.
Are like on a special table over by the door in the Valley. Are they also at the other libraries?
Yes.
Because I don't get into the city or down to Douglas
that
often.
They're on the kind of former reference area downtown, and then just on the circulation counter at the Douglas Library.
Well, you have a busy summer coming up.
We do.
Any other things that we need to know about? Any other programs that are floating around out there?
No other programs, but I really wanted to assure, we have just finished going to 10 of the schools in Juneau promoting the summer reading program, passing out these double-sided flyers. Parents, asked your child for the green flyer that the library ladies gave them. And we just wanted to make sure. Somebody while we were touring said, do these people really believe kids are going to read this summer? And we give a resounding yes, absolutely. Reading is still essential.
Your circulation figures show that indeed children do read, and it's an amazing process. Our libraries are a wonderful resource for Juno. Thank you so much
for sharing
these programs.
Have a great evening, afternoon.
Saturday morning and the rain is pouring. Dad worked late last night and he's in there snoring. Same old stuff on TV. Boring. So what if I can't go out and play? I know what I do today. I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gotta say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Now I like books and they like me. So when I go to the library, I sit down in my favorite chair and check to see who's there. Maybe one book, maybe two. Take me home, says Winnie the Pooh. And if we have to travel far, I'll bring my honey jar. Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi. Picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Sleeping Beauty yawned and said, I'll come when I get out of bed. But Madeline says, let her nap, and jumped into my lap. The Cat in the Hat says, hey, I'll go. Don't take him, cries Pinocchio. Don't take that cat to your address. He always makes a mess. Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Mrs. Parker's back behind the checkout desk today. The Cheshire Cat jumps on her head and says, let's play. But Mrs. P says, goodness, are you sure you want all these? Oh, yes, we shout together. She says, shh, quiet, please.
I'm going down to the library, taking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, taking out a book, check it in, check it out.
Seven dwarfs begin to shout, hey, take us with you, check us out. Then Cinderella gets her gown, and Babar grabs his crown. Then Curious George swings from the shelf, along comes Mother Goose herself. Out the door we danced and sang, the whole library rang.
Oh, I'm going down to the library, picking out a book, check it in, check it out. Gonna say hi to the dictionary, picking out a book, check it in, check it out.
Little appropriate music for the upcoming summer reading program at the library.
Years ago, my life changed. Divorced, I lost my job, and then I was diagnosed with a mental illness. Today, I offer peer support, working full-time, helping others experiencing mental illness find jobs and security. Getting the right services and supports and having help from others in my situation helped in my recovery. Finding the right treatment made all the difference. Take the first step. Call 211.
This message brought to you by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
It's just 26 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is coming to us all the way from sunny Yakutat. Hi there.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm real good, Susan. This is Susan Ohlers, and Susan is here to tell us about the Yakutat Turn Festival. That's T-E-R-N, not T-U-R-N. So what is up with the turn?
What is up?
Or where are the turns up, I guess? Actually, they nest there, so they're more or less down at this point, right?
Right. So we're having the Turn Festival here. This is going to be the third year of the festival. And as you mentioned, the focus of the festival is turns. We have both Aleutian and Arctic turns here. So it's really, it's a celebration of the natural resources we have here as well as our cultural resources and focusing on the tern, but, everything else, like I say, including other birds and the culture and just all the natural resources that we're lucky to have here in Yakutat.
Susan, the tern is an amazing bird, and I'm not sure everybody knows very much about them, but I would assume that since you're a spokesperson for the Tern Festival, you can kind of fill us in. This is actually the animal with the longest migration pattern in the world, right?
Right. Yes. There's several species of terns. It's a colonial nesting seabird, so they nest in groups or colonies. And like you mentioned, the Arctic tern has been documented to have the longest migration in the world, thus far. It's been documented that they'll travel over 50,000 miles in the course of a year. And we also have the Aleutian tern, which not as much is known about that species, but it's the research is showing that they're also a long-distance traveler.
Now, the terns, that the Arctic terns have this white wing color, and the Aleutian terns are a little more grayish, I think, right? That's one of the ways you tell the difference, and they have a slightly different wing shape?
Yeah, that's one of the ways is the wing pattern. What's pretty easy to tell them apart is the color of their head. The Arctic tern has a solid black head, and the Aleutian tern has a black head, but it has a real distinct white forehead. So that's a pretty easy way to tell them apart. And also they have different calls.
And I think there's a third species of tern that's been spotted in Alaska, but is not common up here. I can't remember the name of it. It starts with a C.
Right. Yeah. There's a Caspian tern.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, and we see them, they come through, but we've definitely been seeing more of them, and I think, the common thought is that they are kind of starting to expand their range and maybe nesting in some areas around here.
So what will we do with these terns? Do you have turning dances in the street? And
We do all
things. Right now, I'm gonna play a piece of music at the end of this that you'll probably recognize.
Okay. Yes. Oh, there's all kinds of fun we can have with the playing with the words and, we have lots of things going on. There's a little bit something for everyone. It's it's not just for birds. So we do have field trips to see birds, including the terns, and then we also we do have some dancing, but it's by the local native dance group, the Yakutat Mount St. Elias Dancers, and they are spectacular. It's a not-to-be-missed event. And we also have, different speakers talking about birds and other topics and birds and culture, and we've got art going on and lots of activities for the kids. There's 4 days' worth of activities for the kids.
So 4 days, this starts when? Thursday? Friday?
This starts this coming Thursday.
Ah, okay. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes.
And it doesn't slop over into Memorial Day, huh? So.
It's next weekend.
Next weekend. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. You've made some transportation arrangements here. There's a discount fare with Alaska Airlines, and there's also an arrangement whereby the Tern Festival is synchronized with the ferry schedule?
Yeah, that's correct. We have a discount with Alaska Airlines coming from really anywhere that Alaska Airlines flies, and I believe it's 20%. If you go to our website, which is YakutatTurnFestival.org, there's information on there, including
there's a code you can
there's a code. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the ferry coming from Juneau coincides well with the festival. I think it gets in a day or so before, and then a day or so before or after the festival. So. It gives you time to go to the festival and maybe see a little bit more of Yakutat while you're here.
If people want to come up and stay a couple of days, how do you find out about accommodations?
That's a good question. We do have if you go to the festival website, there's some information on there. There's a few places in town that are offering specials specifically for the festival.
Uh-huh.
And then we also have a link on there to the Yakutat Chamber of Commerce website, which lists additional options in town.
What are the transportation options up there once you're actually off the ferry or out of the plane in Yakutat? Do you need to rent a car? Do you walk everywhere? What?
You know, it depends. That, you know, town itself is pretty walkable. There is a taxi. I think there's actually two different taxis here. And then otherwise, you know, pretty good chance that you're going to want to rent a car so you can, you know, get out of town and see some of the sites. And there's several different car rental companies here.
What are some of those sites that you might want to go see?
Oh, you would want to, definitely everyone wants to see the beach. We've got miles and miles of sandy beaches here, so, you know, 10 minutes from town, you can drive down to Cannon Beach, and you can walk for miles either direction, and it's called Cannon Beach because there's actually old cannons left there from World War II days, so that's a must-see, and they're just now, we're getting access out the end of the road where you can go to Harlequin Lake, and you can drive out there and see the iceberg coming off of the Yakutat Glacier, which is just a spectacular sight. So those are a couple of the must-sees.
Hiking trails?
There are hiking trails, you bet. We've got several trails just kind of in and around town, and there's some more remote trails, and, you know, again, just hiking the beach, you just can't beat it.
It's a little early for people to go fishing, but Yakutat has a terrific reputation for salmon.
We do. Right now, it's just kind of the tail end of the steelhead season.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, starting about mid to late June, the sockeye salmon will be coming. And so, yeah, the SeaTac River is world famous for that, and it's just a neat area to visit even when the fish aren't there yet.
Well, let's go through the dates and times for the Tern Festival one more time so everybody can scribble these down on their paper or their iPads.
Okay, sure. So it starts on May 30th. That's a Thursday. You know, again, kids' activities that day, and we've got an opening reception that night. And then it goes through Sunday, June 2nd.
Outstanding. Hey, a great little local festival, a chance to learn all about Yakutat, and a chance to meet Susan Ohlers, who will be, are you going to meet us all at the plane when we get there?
You bet.
Okay.
You bet.
Okay, I'll look for you on the runway. Okay, thank you so much for telling us all about this. Folks, tickets 20% off on Alaska Airlines, or the ferry's schedule coincides nicely with the events at the Tern Festival in Yakutat coming up next weekend, starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Forget-me-nots in your garden will remind you of places you have known. From cuttings in my garden, fond memories are sure to grow. For yesterday's seeds hold the promise of sharing the love you have sown. Touch, we never would have grown. Don't neglect must care for as our own. From cuttings in our gardens, fond memories are sure to grow. For yesterday's seeds hold the promise of sharing the love we have sown.
It's about 15 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. My next two guests are two folks who are going to tell us a little bit about a number of things about the community gardens here in Juneau. John Thedinga and Alan Davis are here. So, gentlemen, I'm not sure that everybody in our listening audience is exactly familiar with where the community gardens are located. So where are the community gardens located?
Well, the Juneau Community Garden is in the valley on Montana Creek Road. Mm-hmm. So it's deep into the valley, and it's out on your way to Skater's Cabin out toward Mendenhall Lake out that way. So
it's just past the Gun Club. If you're going up Montana Creek Road, the Gun Club is on the right hand side as you're turning as the road is turning, and we're almost immediately on the left. Just past the Gun Club.
Last fall, when I was recording some interviews with people about composting, I had to make a note when I was recording out there that the firing in the background was not a small war. It was actually the fact that we were recording Pat across the street from the Gun Club. So, mm-hmm. Anyway, so how many plots are there in the garden?
I believe there's 159, the normal 10 by 20 foot size plots, and then we have another 29 climbing beds, at least.
Okay.
Approximately. That's
what it's platted for. We have we also have, I think, currently about 10 of them designated charity plots, although not all. Some of those are being allowed to be fallow this year. But
What's a charity plot?
Ornamental plots and things like that, too.
What is a charity plot?
Well, part of the mission of the garden, as explained in our founding documents, some of the plots will be set aside for growing food for charities. We give food to the food bank, to the Gory Hole, and there's another I can't think of right now. But anyway. Just giving fresh produce to those groups.
So who does the gardening for those?
Well, it's we have one board member who's spearheading that effort and doing a lot of the work, and also gathering volunteers to do it. It's garden members who do the work.
Now, when you have a garden plot out there, you pay a very nominal rental fee, but then you also owe some service hours, I think, as part of the way that works. Is that right? So that's basically, I think, how a lot of that gardening gets done, as well as the other work around the general garden.
Yeah, that's correct. Each plot owner is obliged to do 5 hours of what we call community service at the garden. That's work for the benefit of the garden, not your own plot.
And those hours can be done by mowing the grass, weed whacking. We have special projects every year. This year we're putting a new shed on one of the roofs, so people volunteer for that type of thing. And then the charity plots, they volunteer to plant, to weed, to harvest, all those kinds of things. So there's lots of ways to take care of those service hours.
Have all the people who have those hundreds of plots out there, have they all started their gardens at this point?
Well, most have. There are a few that haven't yet, but this is prime time to get things started. As you know, we don't have a real long growing season, so it's important to get things going, soon and early in the season. This is a real good time to get things going, though.
For the benefit of some newcomers to town, what kinds of things can you grow in Juneau? What is our growing potential? I guess is
well. When I talk to new gardeners, I always tell them to plant potatoes because potatoes do wonderfully here. They're almost foolproof, and you always get a crop. And mm-hmm. they're easy, little maintenance, and so potatoes is one of the things anybody can grow here. Most plots, or well, I can't say most plots, but a lot of plots have some potatoes in them.
Another thing it does real well are your greens, your kale, your lettuce, your spinach, those kinds of things. Those mm-hmm. are a pretty much a sure bet. And along with carrots do real well at the garden. And another one that's, I think, taken hold just recently out there is garlic. Garlic does real well here in town. So
it certainly does. I was out there the other night, and there's a couple of garlic. You plant garlic in the fall, and it comes up in the spring. And there's a couple of people with 12-foot stalks on top of their garlic at this point. I don't know, they look like onions growing up.
You mean 12-inch?
Yeah, 12-inch, yeah. Did I say 12 feet?
Monsters.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. But people grow strange things out there. You can grow artichokes in Juneau.
Yes, actually, I've grown a couple here in recent mm-hmm. years, and actually got a couple to edible size, and they're kind of a pretty plant, actually.
They are.
So you can grow some unusual things too.
Also, a lot of people have devised little sort of mini greenhouses by putting like plastic hoops or a wooden structure covered with visqueen, and that adds a considerable amount of heat to the air around your plants. So that you can grow, zucchini and I know somebody who's has got a pumpkin plant, and she's trying to get the biggest pumpkin she can possibly grow.
Uh-huh.
Some things that you wouldn't expect can be grown under plastic here.
Not just under plastic, but also there's a fabric called Remay that I'm not sure people are familiar with outside of Juneau. I haven't seen it. I think it's used by commercial gardeners someplace. That actually is more to keep the impact of the rain and the insects off of the beds, I believe.
Yes, and also it's it'll help warm up the soil or warm up the area under that Remay. And so it's really a good thing to use when you're first starting your plants and your seeds. It'll help protect them from frost, which we hopefully we're done with now. That lasted quite a long time this spring. So it's a real good fabric, and I think Remay is actually a brand name for that material. But you'll see a lot of that out there, and it's a very good thing to use around here.
Now, Alan, you said something about working with new gardeners. So one of the things that I've experienced out there is that it's really not difficult at all to get advice. Whenever you go out to the garden, there's a lot of people around who've been gardening for a while, and you sort of wander around and get some interesting ideas from them.
Yeah, you can just wander around and see how other people have planted and what they're doing. But also, gardeners are happy to talk about it and share ideas and answer questions. There's almost always somebody out there.
There's a community garden association, I think, that handles a great deal of this stuff, right?
What do you mean?
The Gardening Association is a group of officers who more or less administer the garden plots and like that. You've made reference to a number of people who are members.
Yeah, that's the board of directors for the garden.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they hold monthly meetings and kind of help people get going with their gardens and give out the plots and like that.
Yeah, they basically manage all those kinds of things. And this time of year for new members, we do an orientation to show new gardeners all around the garden and how things work and so on and so forth. So, there was, seven members, board members? Is that right, Alan?
There's nine.
There's nine now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it's nine.
Okay. All right.
And then you're doing something with chairs?
Chairs. Oh, yeah. Okay. So
since we've been telling people all day that we were going to talk about chairs, I thought I'd casually bring it up.
Well, yeah, that's Suzanne Williams is heading that up, and that's a project to transform those old plastic molded chairs that a lot of people have around here, the chairs that you sit out in the lawn or on your deck with, and after a number of years, they start to change color and things start to grow on them and that kind of thing, and they don't look all that great, unless you really take good care of them and bring them in. So if you've got those and instead of discarding them and getting a new one and Suzanne has a way to just revitalize those and make them beautiful again and rainbow colors, and so she's heading up a little project at the community garden tomorrow, Saturday at 10 o'clock, and kind of show you how to make those things come back to life. So, and it's a way to keep them out of the landfill, I guess, and kind of recycle those old chairs.
I was out there the other day, and I think the chairs are starting to multiply underneath the canopy over there on the side. I saw quite a healthy pile of chairs that was ready to be undertaken with these treatments.
Yes.
Plus some I think she's already done that are in very bright primary colors.
Yes, she has.
She's done this for several years. I don't know if she did it last year, but she's been resurfacing these things for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, I think. And she keeps finding new ones that need to be worked on.
Yes. Now, I know in the spring you have the gathering where people can get their plots, and then there's the orientation, which just happened a couple of weeks ago for people who have already gotten plots and are trying to figure out how to run the equipment. And then you have another major event coming up in the fall when we have the harvest fair, and that's, in August? Is there anything between now and August for the general public?
Yeah, there's actually another event coming up in, I guess, 3 weeks, June 15th, we're having a rhubarb festival.
Ah, yes. Okay.
To celebrate rhubarb, which is kind of the first crop that we get.
And there is some mighty rhubarb coming in right now out of the garden. I was looking at plants. I think we were out in the sun Monday or Tuesday setting in some seeds. And there's some serious rhubarb out there right now.
As a matter of fact, we had our first rhubarb dessert last night, so this evening. So, yeah.
Okay. So this is open to the public, right?
Yes, it is.
And anyone can bring a rhubarb dish.
Yeah,
yes.
It's kind of
doesn't have to be grown
to
at the
off,
yeah, doesn't have to be grown at the community garden. It can be the rhubarb out your back window and
right.
That sort of thing. Okay,
absolutely.
But the concept here is all dishes of rhubarb. Anything that you want to bring, from a Chinese stir fry of rhubarb to rhubarb cobbler to anything else that's made with rhubarb.
Yeah.
So a little
just
creativity.
To show off the possibilities for rhubarb.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's other food as well, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So the public is invited out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the highlights of that is that members of the board of directors and other community gardeners are always out there working their plots. So I notice when the rhubarb festival gets underway, there's a lot of people who like to just walk up and down and kind of take a look and see what's possible in Alaska and like that, and maybe make a mental reservation that next year when they're renting plots, maybe it's time for me to get started in that sort of thing. I think that's probably a great concept.
It is. It's just another nice chance to see the garden and the gardeners in action out there. So.
You bet.
Yeah, and once it's really growing, once the things are really showing up on plots, it's just fun to walk around. Just interesting. If you're at all
really
interested in gardening, it's
you can come out any time. By the way,
the
gates open from basically
9 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Rough figures, and anyone who wants to can kind of wander through the garden and take a look at.
It's city and borough property that we lease from them, and it's covered by Parks and Rec. It's not exactly a park, but it is open to the public, and that's part of our deal with the city.
Well, Alan and John, tomorrow is this chair reclamation effort. What time does that start?
That's 10 o'clock tomorrow, and that's open to the public, too.
Okay. So anyone who wants to bring a chair or anyone who wants to see this process, just
drop in. It doesn't take that long to figure out to come in and see how to fix up those old chairs. So
outstanding. Okay, and then 3 weeks from now on June 15th, right?
Right.
Is the Rhubarb Festival, so start looking
and
through the books.
And also, we should just mention,
yes.
August 24th is our Harvest Fair, which is the big event for us. And we have, judged exhibits of produce and flowers and garden baskets and such, and tours, and it's just a really really nice event, so we hope everybody can put that on the calendar also.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Come on back and tell us about these events as we get closer to them so we can kind of post people up on them, okay?
Okay.
We'll do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Alan. This next piece of music I was supposed to have played when we were just finished with the Turn Festival up in Yakutat. So I'm going to play it right now so that we get it in here. Here it is. Our close out music in honor of the Tern Festival coming up in Yakutat starting next weekend, starting Thursday. So make your reservations on the ferry or by plane now. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276 AF at 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is on K210 AS at 89.9. I've enjoyed bringing you Juneau Afternoon today. Pat Moore, your host, and I will see you all later. Here is All Things Considered.